December 4th, 2014, and the Institute for Leadership Studies presentation of Carlos Santana right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu.
Ooh, don't you love that music? Those are my years. Actually, they were guitars, rock and roll. Those are my years. Are you happy to be here tonight? Yes, so am I. I am so happy to be here. And we are just thrilled, thrilled that you are. Book Passage, our partner, this is our 95th lecture together over 10 years to bring amazing people to Marin and Dominican University of California. Thank Book Passage, please. And you know, the best way to thank them is to do what you're doing today. Give them their patronage and join in community to come together to meet famous, great people to talk about how they've changed the world. And that's why we have this program. It's called the Leadership Lecture Series. My name is Denise Lucy. I'm a professor of business and organizational studies and the director of our Institute for Leadership Studies. Now, how does this program fit with that? Well, it does. When we think about Carlos Santana and what he's done in his career, imagine what he's done. He's brought together so many people from around the world, all these different cultures, different music types, and created his own new music that others have copied and used. He's affected change by aligning others. He's at the top of the charts when it comes to inspirational leaders. Leaders inspire, and he's inspired me. How about you? So let's get him here on the stage. I want to take some moments to thank our sponsors, Private Ocean Wealth Management, which has supported this program for 4 years. Let's hear it. Because Private Ocean has been our sponsor for 4 years, and because of that, we've been able to double the programming we've been able to offer to you. Just to tell you more about Private Ocean, we call them Private Ocean Personal Powerful Wealth Management, one of the oldest and largest privately held wealth management firms in Marin. It was named 7 times by Worth Magazine as one of the top 100 registered investment advisors nationwide, and was on the best wealth management firm by the North Bay Biz. Private Ocean is committed to community engagement and involvement, as you can see by their commitment to us here. I would like to introduce to you the co-founder and the chairman of the board of Private Ocean, Richard Stone, who also happens to be on our board of trustees. Are we lucky? We are so lucky. Mr. Richard Stone is going to introduce our guest. Richard?
Good evening. This is clearly supernatural with Carlos, what he did to make the rain stop tonight for us, so we should be very thankful for that. It's beautiful. Carlos Santana is a rock music legend and universal superstar who sold more than 100 million records and entertained more than 100 million fans at concerts worldwide. To date, he's won 10 Grammy Awards, including a record-tying 9 for his Supernatural album, and 3 Latin Grammy Awards. Rolling Stone magazine named Carlos 15th among the top 100 guitarists of all time. He's been honored at the Kennedy Center, inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame, and been given a Lifetime Achievement Award at Billboard's Latin Music Awards. This year, Carlos will release his first ever Latin music album, Corazon. Carlos surpassed the Rolling Stone and joined Barbra Streisand as the only two music acts in Billboard history to score at least one top 10 album for 6 consecutive decades. This fall, Carlos has released his long-awaited memoir, The Universal Tone, Bringing My Story to Light. We're honored and privileged that he's here at Dominican tonight to discuss it with us. Carlos is being joined on stage in conversation with Cheryl Jennings, an Emmy Award-winning news anchor for KGO-TV ABC in San Francisco. Would you please join me in welcoming Cheryl and Carlos?
Lucky are we, right?
Thank you.
That's what I'm saying. Those introductions were so lovely, I think that we're probably done, but no, you want to hear from Carlos, right? I am so thrilled to be here tonight.
I'm very grateful.
And to be with you and to be with all of you, and wow, we got a packed house here. No stress from finals, kids? No? Okay. I was warned about that. All right, you got a copy, right? When you came in? Isn't that generous? Oh, okay. The universal tone. So, Carlos, I have to ask you, what was the motivation? I mean, why did you decide to do this? This is a big book, and it took a lot of people to put this together.
It's healing. I think that everyone in their life, no matter who they are or where they are, we all need, every step we take is like healing. Healing is accepting compassion and forgiveness to yourself first until you can give it to somebody else. Healing, you know, navigating through adversity and guilt, shame, judgment, contentment, fear, you know, navigating through all that stuff that we were, they call it indoctrination, but it's really called, well, they call it indoctrination, but it's really a mental slavery.
Oh, wow. Okay. When I want to take people back, because everybody knows about Carlos's brilliant career, but I want to take you back to your childhood. You're one of seven kids. You're right in the middle, and you're from a little teeny, teeny town in Mexico. It was dirt poor. You didn't have anything, but your parents had a lot of love. So you talk about your family for a little while.
I'd love to. I'm very grateful to God that he put me in a home where my mother was so... with supreme conviction, and my father with supreme charisma, and they both created this family of just every day was an event, you know. Because my father was like so happy-go-lucky, you know. He was just a charmer.
He was a musician.
Mm-hmm. He played violin. When I remember in the beginning, he was playing music more like Agustin Lara music, which at that time, Agustin Lara was like the Cole Porter of Mexico, kind of thing.
Okay. You know?
And but when he moved to Tijuana, he started playing mariachi music because this is the music that the tourists want to hear, you know. But in the beginning, I remember him playing with accordions and cellos and pianos and this very elegant, almost like chamber music from Europe. In fact, that's what it is. It's chamber music.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, one way of looking at it, right? From your perspective. And as a child, I remember reading in the book about the way your parents met. There was a parade.
Yes, it was very... my mother told me that story, I think, once or twice. The first time, I couldn't believe it. It was like... She said that she heard it was, the sun was going down, everything is getting golden, you know, like when the sun goes down. And she heard this barulla. Barulla means commotion, this noise. And she asked her dad, "What's that? ¿Qué es eso?" And my mom's father said, "Ese es el diablo, is it that, it's that demon, you know, el farol, you know." It was demon, farol. So she opened the curtains, and she saw this parade of, the front line was prostitutes. And my father had the violin bow, like a flagpole, and he had underpants and baziers, you know, like this. And of course the priest wanted to throw holy water at them. And the mayor loved my dad, you know, because he was a good friend of my dad. So that's the picture that I have of seeing my dad being a divine rascal, if you will.
Oh, my goodness, that's a great story. Well, there's another part of the story where you talked about your mom was, because your dad was traveling to earn money, playing music, so your mom basically had the kids, and she had charge of discipline, and she was used to punish you.
She was pretty intense. Yeah. You know, I think at that time, we didn't have what we have today. Today, we have the luxury of communicating with tools and skills.
Today, she didn't use tools and skills.
Back then, it was just a hose, a stick, you know. You know, a hand to butt talk, you know. You know. But it was very effective, though, because none of us ever, you know, went the wrong way.
You were difficult. You were a difficult child.
It was effective with all of us because by the grace of God, you know, the way she did it, she made us realize that respect was paramount in our house, you know. So she would just go, and everybody was like, she goes, "That's okay, I'm just clearing my throat." You know, so.
But she would come into a room and ask you, "What are you doing?"
She come into the room, and she look at me or anyone and says, "¿Qué estás haciendo? What are you doing?" And if you say nothing, "I know. Do something." En español es acomedido. Hazte acomedido. En inglés es make yourself useful. Make yourself useful. Clean something. Do something, you know. So she couldn't stand to see anybody just doing nothing, you know. And I thank her for it, you know. I think that that is what's missing, I think, a lot in society today. There is such thing as spiritual discipline, and you know, and I think that it helps you value things a lot more.
At the time, though, you would run away.
Well, yeah, because
you'd
hurt.
Squirm to try to get away.
Yeah, I
it
would,
was hard to see it at that time.
Yeah, I would definitely run away more than a couple of times.
But there was a time when you ran away, and you reflect on this in the book that you were not afraid. As a little boy, you weren't afraid. You were in new situations, and you weren't afraid. And that kind of led you into new things as an adult. You were curious.
When you replace fear for wonderment, it's really a good thing. You know, for me, I was always wondering, what's over there? You know, what's that? You know, and so even when I was a child, you know, I wonder what was it like to go over there and you know, like my first time in Japan, it was incredible, or you know, or Africa. It's really good to park your fear as much as possible to the day and accept wonderment and the unknown.
Your parents, there's another passage in the book, your parents had this intense relationship and a deep love, but it was a bit tumultuous, if I could use that word.
Which, a bit too what?
Tumultuous. It was a little intense.
Well, yeah.
There was some, there was a lot of yelling, and maybe even more.
I mean, who wants to marry to a wishy-washy person, you know? No, I think that energy creates energy. And now, because through everything that they went through, and I honor it with dignity, everything. But I remember right even before the end, my mother, by 6 months, and my father would have been married 60 years, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember they would just look at each other, and then they just lock in, and the rest of us would go, "Okay, we're chapped liver. Let's leave the room," you know, because they have this beautiful thing about them. So, through all of that, I honored it. Nowadays they call it twin souls, You know, that no matter what the issues or no matter what the situation or what presented itself, their love for each other was very, very something to behold.
One of the things that really stuck with me is when you became successful with your first album, you honored your parents in a very unusual way, because as a kid, you remember your mom had to wash the clothes in the river or in a bucket with dirty water.
I remember making that promise very clearly. I saw my mom, you know, washing like the washboard, Sam, you know, the washboard thing. And I said, Mama, you see me home. Someday, I'm going to buy you a house and a refrigerator and a dishwasher and a dryer and a... That's nice, mijo. And I was like... I didn't like to be dismissed like that. I said, Mom, you know, it's like, I'm going to do it. She goes, yeah, that's nice, you know. So as soon as I got our first royalty check, I never seen so many zeros to the right. That's the first thing I did. I went to the accountant and I said, you know, I need, you know, look for the house. We found the, I told my mom, go look for the house. What? I said, go look for the house. And she found the house that she liked, you know, and it was such a supreme ecstasy joy to give her that house before anything else, you know? Thank you. Thank you.
That just was the beginning of your philanthropy and just the way you honor your parents. You dedicated your book to your mother. I love the inscription, for her power, patience, tenacity, unshakable faith, and total conviction. So is she one of the angels you believe in who's watching over you now?
Oh, my mother was not an angel. She was an archangel. No, she was an archangel. She was an architect of, because, you know, you have to understand, she had a certain way of sitting, and then she'd say, God is going to give me this. And we were like, uh-oh, there she goes. And you can almost feel her pulling God's coat, like, you know. And I never seen anyone pray the way she prayed with so much. It's almost like willing God to give her what she wanted, you know, with that kind of audacity of faith. You know, not lording the Lord or anything like that, but just believing that it was gonna be done. And so I learned to like look at the intensity, like, whoa, she's really serious about this. You know, she really believes in this. You know, there's mechanics to grace. And my mom was really understood. So that's why I don't call her an angel. She was an archangel. I know angels, but she was an archangel.
Okay, well then I'll move on about that.
Okay.
Your dad tried to teach you to play the guitar when you were about 8 years old.
You mean the violin?
The violin.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. I understand. Well, again, it was around 5 in the afternoon, the sun is, everything is golden. And he said, mijo, ven para acá, come here. I says, okay. So he took me to the back of the house in this yard. He opened his violin and he goes, mira, which means look, pay attention. And he grabbed the violin, put it like that, and he went, oye. And then this bird comes out of nowhere, lands over there and he goes, and then he goes, he didn't even look at the bird, he goes, otra vez, one more time. The bird. And I was like, oh, dang. So he goes, ves, which means you see, if you can talk to animals and birds, you can talk to people through music.
And you do. You talk to people through music.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
So from the violin, how did you get to the guitar? I knew there was a guitar in there somewhere.
The violin had three strikes for me. I didn't like the way it smelled. I didn't like the way it felt, and I definitely didn't like the way it sounded coming out of my hands. Because I sounded like a real bad Jack Benny. Or a hurt cat in the alley, you know.
Oh.
So I was like, no. So I tried. So he was compassionate enough to allow me to choose at least another instrument. And because of my mother and him, they brought me an electric guitar.
And how did you begin with those lessons? And then when did you realize that you actually had some ability?
I learned to see that, like my father, I could connect. Because my education, my alma mater education, the first one, my primary school was in Tijuana in a strip joint. I would play for an hour, and prostitutes would strip for an hour. And I learned how they walked, you know, and, oh. So I, you know, it's called articulation, body articulation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a very good word for that.
Yeah. So we do that every day, but on Sunday morning, I play the violin on church. I play Ave Maria. And then I see the same prostitutes that work side by side with me, dressed in impeccable white, all the way with white candles and their children dressed in white, going to church. And so I learned to see that divinity is in everyone, because they do that because they have to feed the children, not because they want to. And I learned to see that God is in them as much as God is in the Pope or Dalai Lama or Desmond Tutu. God is in everyone and in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you.
So out of the prostitutes in the church, what was the next level for you?
My mother said it was time to go again, so it was time to move to San Francisco.
You moved a lot.
Well, we spent enough time in Tijuana, Autlan, and then Tijuana, and it was time to move to San Francisco. Because of my dad, she always chased my dad.
And she literally chased him in one story.
Oh, yeah. Every story is about chasing dad, you know. But we always caught up with him. And I'm sure that where they are together, they don't have to chase each other anymore. They just
take the high road.
Yes.
Yes. But there was a trend. I know you had to come to when you came to San Francisco, you had to learn English, and at one point you were washing dishes. You were a dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very, very humble beginnings, and all this while music was in your soul, and you had to feed that.
Yes, I worked at TikToks for about from 64. 63 to like 67, 66. And it was, strangely enough, it was the same day that I was reading this comic book about Spider-Man. And of course the story is, and the thing that it said is, with power comes responsibility. So I started feeling, since I was going already to the Fillmore, I started seeing that I did have something. I felt at an early age, from Tijuana, even when I came to San Francisco, that I have something. I was bringing something to the table that a lot of kids did not. Some did, but most of them didn't. And I knew that I knew something that they didn't know how to do and how to do it, you know? So when I started going to the Fillmore, I started seeing the Grateful Dead and Michael Bloomfield and the Quicksilver and Country Joe, Jefferson Airplane, everyone. And I was still watching dishes. Sunday afternoon, and this three limousines pull in front, and it's the Grateful Dead. They came to, you know, get some hamburgers. And I looked at them, and the limousine and them, and I said, I can do that.
Oh.
I can be that. I can do that. And So there was a series of things that God creates a situation of many, many variety of calling you to your calling, you know? And so created a lot of things that I had no course but to just say. So I went up to it and punch, you know, you have to punch the thing for the union and, you know.
The time card?
Yeah, the time card. Uh-huh. And I said, you know what? I'm quitting. I'm never going to work here again. They said, yeah, well, I dare you to. So I grabbed the card and went. I said, you'll never see me here again unless I'm so hungry, starving to eat this funky hamburgers. And so I punched the card and walked out and never came back. And I realized that in that moment that I had this choice to never ever be a weekend musician. Mm-hmm. I would be a total musician whether I starved to death or not. And it takes that for you to direct your energy to total, absolute commitment to something, you know? So there was a lot of things that directed me to making that, a decision like that in a moment. You know, leaving my mother, leaving the house, leaving my sisters and brothers, you know, just totally turning back on everything. Living in the streets, which was a lot of fun, you know, and learning, always learning to articulate the language of the universal tone.
That's a great thing. Can you describe what that means to folks, to you?
What is
the universal tone?
The universal tone is a frequency. It's a sound resonance vibration. Then when it comes from the center of your heart to your fingers, you remind people of the forgotten song inside them. Everyone has the same forgotten song. And that same song is a beautiful melody. It's a beautiful symphonic melody that says, you are worthy of God's grace. You're not a wretched sinner. You're not rich at anything. I love to quote a gentleman who I love named J.J. Hutak from Los Gatos, because he said, may the heavens open up, may the heavens open up and the angels bless each and every one with the deep awareness of your own light. The universal tone is about helping you claim the sunlight beam or the beam of light that you are inseparable from God. Once you connect and stay with it as much as possible, watch out. The world will never be the same for as we know it. It's like claiming that the world is round instead of flat. It took a lot of courage to say that. It takes a lot of courage to say that we're in a place to upgrade three books: the Constitution, the Bible, and the National Anthem. Yeah. It's just my humble opinion.
But you are Carlos Santana.
Thank
Come
you.
On. So you took this challenge, you gave up everything, you made this commitment, you started getting better, and you remember when you knew that this is going to happen for you, what were the influences on you at that point?
God always sends constantly an army, a group of people, Bill Graham, who is the architect and the person supremely responsible for us being in Woodstock, Clyde Davis, twice, you know, Jerry and Diane, you know. I'm God always sends the right emissaries of light to help me walk in through a bigger door in my life. I have come to realize that I never enter alone. I bring everything with me. This is why I have this sound, because I'm not playing for me. I'm playing collectively for everybody. So I'm grateful to God because he's very diligent with everyone in this room. and myself. We are all anointed. God has his hands on everyone's head. It's just that some people listen and some people don't.
Miles Davis was a big influence.
Oh, yes, he still is.
To this day, even though he's gone, but he had so much to do. And you have some great quotes about things that he said to you that made you know to own yourself.
Well, I never knew, and I have never known in this planet, in my lifetime, someone who I get the feeling that the angels would come to God and say, "You're not going to believe what he did right now." I know you're talking about Miles Davis. Yeah, you're not going to believe. I know Leo Malone is Miles Davis, you know? It's like he had a special covenant with being outside, because he wouldn't take anything from anyone, black or white, before the Black Panthers or Black Movement or anything. This is a person who, like Harry Belafonte, some people just do not take crap from anybody, you know? He changed music 7 to 9 times, literally, like Leonardo da Vinci, you know? And I have some stories to tell, but I almost feel like I need to take a deep breath and ask God, do you really want me to say this? Because they really, you know, we're taking the high road here. And the thing about Miles Davis is that he was funny. He was funnier than Richard Pryor, you know?
There's probably nothing you can share about that, though, right?
I'll share one. He came to see me in 1981. He hadn't been playing since 75, and my good friend Michael Carabello brought him to one of our concerts in New York, and he was backstage, and everybody left the room because I always meditate before I go on stage for about 10, 15 minutes. So I was meditating, and he was just sitting there looking at me. And he had these eyes like two red laser beams at my medal. I had this medal like this, not this one, because my mom gave me this one. But I was meditating, and I could feel his eyes just like, so I opened my eyes and I said, "Miles, do you want it?" And he says, "Only if you put it on me." So I took it off, and as I was putting it on him, he says, "You know, I pray in my own way too." I says, "You pray?" He says, "Of course. I want to score some cocaine." So I said, "God, please make that mama be home." And I was like, "Oh Lord, okay."
Well,
so he had his own covenant, you know, with God.
Okay. So you got better. Do we want to talk about how drugs affected your career?
I never taken drugs.
Okay.
I take medicine.
Ah. Very eloquently put.
I love to, at this moment in time, represent, or at least give my own clarity about one from the other. Drugs, humans make in a laboratory. Medicine, sunbeams from the sky and the water create on Earth.
Got it.
It's a big distinction.
Got it.
Okay.
About it anymore. All right, worst moment. I know that there's a story about this, but maybe you won't tell it. The worst moment in your career.
Yet to happen.
All right. I seem to recall some moment where you were saying, get me through this, but that's a chapter that you guys will just have to read in the book.
Yeah, but you know, those things are temporary setbacks, and is something that, what does someone say? You know, it's funny. Someone said, when you go through your own personal hell, don't take pictures and then show them to your friends. You know? So at the time that that happened, you know, you always feel that that's going to be the end of everything. And for and then you ask, like my mom prayed, you know, and I said, God, please help me. This is kind of painful. You know, this is not kind. This is really painful. And I hear this voice that says, I am right next to you. Isn't that enough? Release so-and-so and the children to me. I am in charge of how many times they breathe, their cells, their thoughts, and their growth. Release them to me. I need both of your hands because what I have a gift for you, and this gift is very heavy. You need both hands, so you can't be holding on to them. You need both hands to receive this gift. Oh, and by the way, this gift is not for you. This gift is for you to share with people. So, you know, I'm grateful because I do listen to this voice since I've been a child, and it has carried me through many, many. If you read in the book, at least 7 to 10 times, I shouldn't even be here. You know? So, by the grace of God, I keep. I don't say the word survive because that means sounds like I barely made it. I'm not a survivor. I'm different, you know, and by the grace of God, where he wants something different even right now from myself for the future. Total commitment to transfiguration. Total commitment to implementing the lessons that I'm learning daily through Course in Miracles. And really crystallize conviction, supreme conviction from my mom with humility. You know, because sometimes I have so much conviction, it feels like I'm arrogant about it, like, you know, because the way she prayed, you know. But I aspire to balance both of it with grace, and it's okay to have conviction. But it's even best to do it in a gentle, humble way. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm learning now.
So you feel like you're a cat. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Your music began with your lessons in Tijuana and has evolved over the years. It's so many different things. How would you describe it, if it's even possible?
Music is, for me, a delicious combination of melody, which is the female, and rhythm, which is the male. The bed don't matter. The bed could be classical music, mm-hmm. hip-hop, rock and roll, country and western, that's the bed. But it's always the melody and the rhythm. Even the lyrics are incidental sometimes. You know, unless it's a great, great writer like Bob Dylan or Pete Sears or, you know, the Beatles or Curtis Mayfield, Smokey Robinson. But the main thing is in music for me is melody, honoring the melody. And that's all you remember though. When you walk away, you remember the melody. It's a delicious combination of melody and rhythm.
You have so many songs. Do you have a favorite of your own?
I like Samba Pa' Ti a lot. People love Smooth.
Yeah, well, they're all good. And you keep evolving. What was it? What was the other one?
Make Somebody Happy, yes. Make Somebody Strong. Yeah.
You have the. They want to hear you play. Air guitar. That's what you get. You have evolved and kept everything so fresh that you have an entirely new generation of people who are absolutely, they're in adoration of your work. I mean, look at the students here today. They weren't born when you got started. And some of their parents are here, and you're just as fresh today as you were back then.
Thank you. I have faith in your aspirations. I really believe that today is not more difficult for you than for me, for you to put your vision on a top 10 worldwide circulation. It's not impossible for you. Yet, when you're giving birth to this music, you must believe it. You must believe that God, the universe, whatever you believe, has already got people in line to help you take your song to everybody's hearts, you know? So I invite you, the young hearts today, crystallize your existence, sharpen up your vision, and believe without doubt that you can transcend me and Michael Jackson and Bob Marley and Jimi Hendrix. You know? You must believe that you are essential and necessary. You know, the world needs you. You know, the world needs your songs. Don't let anyone, especially yourself, doubt. And then you will make, one of my favorite things is spiritual traction, divine velocity. Spiritual traction is the highest thing that you can do in this planet, no matter who you are or what your profession is to inspire people to aspire. I'll tell you what the difference about aspiration. To a starving person, food is God. To an aspiring person, only God is the food. So when you inspire people to aspire through your music, you're helping accelerate the evolution of this planet in consciousness. When the Beatles came in with All You Need Is Love, One Love, Bob Marley, Imagine, John Lennon, What's Going On, Marvin Gaye, What a Wonderful World, Louis Armstrong. Mm-hmm. All of these songs help us. If we would play the songs in shopping malls, elevators, and everywhere, you wouldn't have what we're having today. Thank you. Songs accelerate your spiritual evolution unfoldment. They really, really do. You know? So that's why I would like to change the national anthem. Because it promotes the opposite. You know, it promotes collective ego arrogance and dropping bombs and all that, you know? My choice would be God Bless the Child, Billie Holiday, or What a Wonderful World, Louis Armstrong. But that's just me.
Carlos wants to use those songs to create a movement in light of what's going on in the streets these days. And it's hashtag mass compassion.
Yes, you know, I thought about this yesterday morning. Well, God implanted in my... And when I was seeing all the, because it won't stop, it keeps going every day, there's protests and riots. And I said, you know, perhaps we can alleviate and help it go in a more constructive way by asking people, when you come to protest and you're not intent, your purpose, motives, and intentions is not to destroy, break, or loot, or burn, dressed in white. Dressed in white and create big banners that say, what is the collective lesson we can all learn from this about love? You know, and play the kind of music that I play when you came in, Holy, Holy. We can shake the world's foundation. We can conquer fear forever. Play the right songs that when the police see you, and they got the thing to mace you, and you know they'll like, oh. They can distinguish you from being someone who needs to make a point. But you're doing it with peacefulness and graciousness and elegance, then you know, just just being angry and destroying it doesn't create anything. There is a way to create a new flow of energy in this nation where we can really transfigurate, conquer, and illumine fear. It's the only problem that we have in the world is fear. There's love and fear. That's all there is, you know? And America, more than any other country, invests so much on promoting fear, mm-hmm. you know? So, I kid you not, I was shocked when I went to New Zealand one time and I found out that they don't permit any kind of toys about killing people in there. They banned them. They won't let them in, and they don't care. Oh. Yeah? Wow. So there is a way for us to change the energy, which that's what we're talking about, in the consciousness of United States. Right now, it's not United States. It's fragmented fear.
Sorry, why don't we hold the questions until a little bit later on?
We're just about there. Thank you so much. And then I'll listen to your heart, all right?
Great advice. So this is the movement that Carlos wants to start, and this is the first audience he's proposed this to.
Thank you.
All right. Before we run out of time, I want to ask you what it was like for you, that first big concert on stage when you had a sea of people and you had made it. What was that feeling like?
I have no idea. I was just praying so hard, like my mother does, for God to keep me. And my mantra was, please, Lord, help me. Help me. Help me to stay in time and in tune. And I'll never do this again.
All right. The Milagro Foundation, you're such a philanthropist, and you help so many programs, especially in Marin County, which is wonderful.
Thank you. This is a foundation that it needed to be giving birth, because I've been doing this. I came here in 63 and I watched Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez and the Black Panthers and Peace and Freedom Movement and so many people, Martin Luther King. So I learned this, and then I learned B.B. King and Tito Puente over here. And so we've been doing benefits for many, many people for a long, long time. So we heard that the Grateful Dead had the Rex Foundation, Deborah and I, my first wife, and we learned to do things in a way where we can give most of the money to people who really need it instead of the government.
I'm sure that pleases a lot of people. Yeah.
And so we started it in, I think it was 90 something. And now it has grown immensely. I feel really, really grateful, you know, to be of service. I want to present this in this way. There was this lady named Thelma Stewart. She's the wife of this multimillionaire person of color. He has so much money, someone told him to buy this thing, and he thought it was a blues band, but he bought the hockey blues players. He has so much money, he bought the hockey blues team, the blues, something, St. Louis Blues, whatever. And then he never been to a hockey player, but, you know, he has so much. So anyway. And Thelma Stewart said to me, when she looked at me and she said, it's a blessing to be a blessing.
That's beautiful.
And I was like, whoa, I never heard anybody put it like that. That mm-hmm. is incredible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you've had this foundation for a long time. It's the Milagros Foundation. If you guys want to help, I know that Carlos could use that, because it's programs that help right here in Marin, which is wonderful.
Thank you so much.
We have questions from the audience. Now we'll take those questions. And you play Michael Jackson songs in concert. Why did you choose his music, and what inspires you about it?
Michael Jackson embodies the ultimate innocence. Children love Michael Jackson. As soon as they see his videos, they're like, it's like seeing Peter Pan or something. You know, they're like, you know, So his music and his vibration, it charms children into, I think it awakes them then to see their own possibilities about learning to dance like that or to be a consummate entertainer. I love his music because it reminds me also of my own innocence.
Then and now.
Then and now.
All right. There's talk of reuniting with Greg Raleigh, Michael Shrieve, maybe Michael Caraballo and Neil Sean?
Yes, absolutely. We already did it. We're 60% in it. Lord willing, in April we'll complete it. Next year in April we'll go and finish the CD.
Awesome. Something to look forward to, right? Yeah. Okay. How do you create your music? What is your creative process?
Get out of the way.
Let it speak to you.
Get out of the way and don't think about it. Allow it to go through you. You hear this melody and grab it any way you can and don't try to change it or do anything. Just, I think they call it automatic writing.
Do you have to be quiet? Do you have to be in a quiet place, or can it happen wherever you are?
You have to be quiet up here. You can be anywhere in New York when it's really loud, but you have to be quiet up here so you can hear it in here.
So you visualize the tune, or you just feel
it? You visualize. Melody. I visualize the audience dancing to it already.
Ah. Okay. They'll be dancing later. Let's see here. Would you ever consider changing careers? And if you did, what would you do? It's a good question. Would that be no?
No. When my mechanics lead me, I can still articulate. And I would be, I don't want to call it a pastor or a minister. An instrument. I would ask God, is it okay to call my church or your church, Church of the Holy Choice? Because that's all you have in this planet. It's just choices. So I would call it the Church of the Holy Choice. Coming in and crystallize your existence.
All right. Good question. Do you have a Bill Graham yelling at you story?
Oh, Lord. Many.
Mickey Hart said everyone does.
It was the first time that we were going to play for him, because he already heard me play because of Michael Bloomfield. So he asked me, do you have a band? I said, yes. And the other friends, who now they're in heaven, at that time, I didn't know how to drive, so they were in charge of the transportation. But we were really late, really, really, really late. And Bill Graham was standing like this, like,
oh boy.
like Jul Brynner, and the jolly green giant, but not jolly. And he started cursing. As soon as he saw me, he started cursing me, children that I had yet to have. he cursed everything, and you'll never work for me again, and how dare you? And I was like, oh, Lord. That was the only time that he actually really yelled at me. The rest of the time, he never did that ever again.
Were you on time the next time, though?
Oh, yes. I changed that. I changed my friends.
Okay. What was it like to play the national anthem before Game 4 of the 2014 World Series?
It was a real honor with Salvador, my son. I said, Salvador, I know you've done this many, many times. I only done it one time, and usually I don't like to do that song anyway. But I'm going to do it because, I was in New Jersey, and he says, Dad, this is Salvador. I said, hi, son, how are you? He says, well, this opportunity came in, and they invited me to do the national anthem at the Giants World Series if they win. And, you know, I said, oh, wonderful. But they'll only let me do it if you play with me.
So you got roped in.
So you know, I felt really bad for him already that he had to say that, you know. Because I am sympathetic to my children. It's not easy being, anyway.
It's not easy being you.
No, it's not easy being them when right. people put that pressure to whatever. So I said, I never do this, but for you, I'm going to do it. Thanks, Dad. So when we arrive at the house to arrange the song, I says, this is how I like to do it, son, if it's okay with you. I'm going to do, 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 do. Actually, we're going to do it like this. Then you. Do-do-do.
Do-do-do.
Me.
Clap with this. Do-do-do.
You know, like that.
Keep going.
Oh, yeah. It's okay.
No, we're enjoying this.
The last
this.
Part, I think, is called The Land of the Free and the Home of the Slave. Oh, never mind.
Oh! All right, we are
anyway, home. So we balanced it. I play half and he play half. And so I feel really grateful. He says, okay, you know, because I was able to cut the cake in half. I play half the melody, he played half. What I remember about it, though, there was a really big explosion at the very end. Was I said, don't play it the way we're gonna, because I'm gonna back out. But don't play it like that during the sound check, because then they'll tell us not to do it like that. So just play it, delete, play it very, you know, vanilla. You know, just play it with a lot of vanilla in it. Yeah. But when we do it, I'm going to back out. We're going to go, take it out. He goes, okay, Dad, you know. And when we did it like that, I think that's what people remember. People remember energy. Bring the energy, you know. And so I really thank you for listening. I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to go nation to nation. And the energy changed. For the Giants and for myself in that moment, they were kind of like that and it went like this. So it's about energy. And right now, for you, for me, for everybody, believe, use your faith, your trust, your convictions. You can move energy worldwide. You can change the world's foundation. You can make a difference in the world. Oh, before I leave, I invite you to, you know, Jerry and Diane, we talk about this all the time. We invite you to make every day the best day of your life. It's your choice. You're not a victim of other than for yourself. Don't blame anybody else. Please, if you want to, know that you can make every day the best day of your life. Thank you so much.